Okay, everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started.
Sorry, my first time on this new conference call, Bridge. We had recently switched, so I had to wrestle with it for a minute and get it going. But my name is Steve Olson. You'll hear me from time to time on here. I fill in from Kurt when he's on a plane getting back from a training or something and is just unable to get back on time. And we are going to cover some information today that I feel like if this was the only thing that you learned as a persuader or a negotiator, it would be well worth your time. Because it's kind of at the heart of why persuasion, why sales can be difficult for people, why it's difficult to make cold calls, why it's difficult to try to sell somebody something. If you have these attributes that we're going to talk about today, all the problems that come with that kind of stuff are going to go away. And so we'll get into that today, and feel free to stop me at any time, ask me questions, make comments. I'm happy to listen, and we can bounce things off of each other. If you've got some valuable experience to add to what's been said, we certainly welcome it. So if you would like to kind of consult notes or some basic information on what I'm going to discuss, you can consult the chapter called The Law of Scarcity, and that can be found in Kurt's manual called Magnetic Persuasion or in his book that's in bookstores called Maximum Influence. But yeah, it's The Law of Scarcity. Does anybody out there feel like taking a stab at what the Law of Scarcity is or what it means?
Lack of abundance.
Lack of abundance. Okay. That would apply, you know, in a material sense, and that could certainly be applied when we're talking about persuasion or controlling a reaction that somebody has to something, right? I remember when I was younger, I was about 16 years old, and on Friday night and Saturday night I'd want to go out with my friends. And I had a curfew, of course, and my mom would tell me, okay, you have to be home at 11:30. And I'd start bickering, no, I don't want to be home at 11:30. And she would go, fine, make it 11. No, no, I'll be home at 11:30. I'll be home at 11:30. Right? And because all of a sudden there was scarcity or there was loss, I was grateful to be coming home at 11:30. And obviously didn't realize till much later on her brilliant technique and her brilliant move, and it worked on me every time. I was a sucker for it. And that is essentially what the law of scarcity is. If there's a lack of abundance or a prospect feels they're not going to get something or like they're going to miss out on something, then that makes them have a tendency to want it even more. Now, here's my disclaimer. You guys have seen this applied, you know, pretty badly throughout the marketplace, haven't you? You know, we've all had the car salesman say, you got to buy this car today. We've all had somebody try to pressure us into doing something very quickly, and we knew deep down that the reason that they were doing it is because if we had time, we'd probably come to our senses, wouldn't we? And that's the caution that you have to take when you're using the law of scarcity, is when somebody feels like you're just pressuring them so that you make a decision in a short period of time, it scares them away, it scares them off. But when there's genuine scarcity there, and that's what we'll talk about, how to develop genuine scarcity, then you get instant action. You can't keep people away. Okay? So there's a couple of concepts that we want to discuss. And while we're talking about this today, I want you to think about a few times in your life when you've seen a bad example of scarcity and when you've seen a good example of scarcity. Okay? So, a law of scarcity would also encompass urgency or lack of abundance, as you said before. And there's a few components in Kurt's book that go over this that we're gonna touch on. All right. Number one, whenever you are trying to persuade somebody, whenever you have made a commitment with them and they're gonna do something, You always, always, always have to have a deadline. Not having a deadline would be pretty ridiculous when you think about it for a second. I mean, when I was a teenager, what if my mom told me, okay, you have to come home tonight. That's it, right? No deadline. Well, what time would I be coming home? Whenever I felt like it, right? The same thing with prospects. Okay, are you going to be able to watch that presentation? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, are you going to be able to look at that brochure? Okay, are you going to be able to get back to me with the time that we can meet? It's absurd. We have to have some kind of a deadline involved, or they're not going to respect us. They're not going to respect our schedule. So, you know, you've got to get paid. You're under deadlines. We've got to pass those along to the prospect. Now, here's the key. The deadline has to be for a reason. Okay? I need you to get back to me by Saturday at 2. Well, why? We've kind of become like little kids, right? We need to know why. Because the car dealers and the mattress salesmen and the furniture guys have been pummeling us with deadlines on the Memorial Day sale or whatever it is for so long, and we don't believe them anymore because they give out the same deal the day after, don't they? So that's why there has to be a good and compelling reason behind your deadline. So let's say you're a network marketer, okay? And realistically, if you're a network marketer, if you brought on 2 or 3 people a week and trained them very intensively so that they'd be successful, that would probably be about all you can handle. Don't tell me you can bring on 50 people and get them all trained up exactly right all by yourself. There's got to be some other back-end systems in place. So an example of a deadline for a network marketer could be, well, Sam, I need to visit with you by this Friday at 2 p.m. and figure out a decision. You know, and between then, now I'll certainly give you all the information that any reasonable person would expect to make a decision. The reason is I am talking to quite a few people this week, and if they're going to get trained properly and get the right attention to be successful in this business, I've got to be making decisions by Friday night. Hence my need to talk to you by Friday afternoon. Is that okay with you? Yeah, I can do that. And it does a couple of things there. You've got your deadline. He realizes that you're busy. He realizes that you're important. And, you know, we respect a busy, important person's time a lot more than we do somebody that we think is just sitting around all day, don't we? That's just how we are. Okay? So that's an example of deadlines. What do deadlines always have to have with them again? Anybody know?
Compelling reason.
A compelling reason, exactly. What's your reason? Now, Kurt, in his book, in the same book, Maximum Influence, in the chapter on verbal packaging, he talks about the power of the word because. When you use the word because, anything that comes after it is automatically a little bit more powerful. And I don't know if you remember, but there was a study about a woman who went onto a college campus, and she went over to the library, and there was apparently quite a long line at the coffee machine over at this library. So she was going to study the power of the word because. So what she would do is she'd go up to the front of the line and said, excuse me, can I cut in line? I need to make some copies. Well, hardly anybody let her cut in line, right? Well, when she went up to the front and said, excuse me, can I cut in line because I'm going to be late for class and I need to make some copies? Went up astronomically. 95% of people let her cut in line. Now here's where it gets really weird. She goes up a third time, excuse me, can I cut in line because I need to make some copies? Well, duh, why else would you be cutting in the line? It's not a vending machine, right? But still, because of the presence of the word because, it automatically set off this little subconscious trigger of, oh, okay, she can cut in line to these people, so 90% of them still let her cut in line. So maybe next time you're in line at the movies or something like that or at a restaurant, just go up to the front and say, excuse me, can I cut in line because I need a table, and let's just see what happens, okay? But it's definitely powerful. So when you're giving your reason on the deadline, you know, I need to hear from you by Tuesday at 3 o'clock because throw that word in there, and it's going to give you a little bit more of a leg up. Does that make sense, everyone? I will take your silences to mean yes. Okay, so let's move on from the deadlines, okay? And I want to get into limited space. Now, when an airline says, we only have 3 tickets left on this flight, and you need to be on that flight, what does that do to you?
Causes you to buy it.
Yeah. It almost forces you to buy it because there's limited space. And if there's limited space, it must be a better product. It must be legitimate. These are things that go through our subconscious mind when we're considering making a decision. Okay? So how can you create limited space with your product or with your service? Now, that little line we used about the network marketers on the deadlines, there was some limited space incorporated there, too. I've only got time to train 3 people. So that implies that, look, you better hurry. It's not like I'm doing this for everyone. How can you create limited space? Now, here's a little homework assignment for you. I already told you to think about today examples of when you've seen good scarcity versus bad scarcity. What I want you to do is I want you to look at the media and advertising. You know, when you're going down the freeway, look at billboards. When you're listening to the radio, listen to the ads. Look at magazine ads. And pay attention over the next little while to how people use limited space. I've had more than one student that I've consulted on persuasion before get amazing ideas from out of their industry. There's a great quote by Jay Abraham. If you don't know him, he's considered to be the premier marketing guru out there. And he has a quote that I love. He says, an idea applied in one industry may have the small effect of lighting a match. But when you cross-apply it to another industry, it's like igniting an atom bomb. That's true. There's certain little ideas that work or maybe don't even work in some industries, but when you put it in yours, it just seems to go crazy. So how do other industries use the limited space factor? How do they do that? And can you apply it to yours? You know, for now, you can only work with a certain amount of people. You only have a certain amount of product on hand. Whatever you can do, it's better than nothing. But there's always that magical formula that you can stir up by looking at different market examples out there. Okay? I will give you some examples of that here in just a minute, because the third and final topic I want to review with you today is the concept of allure. A-L-L-U-R-E. And this is discussed in the Law of Scarcity as well. Okay. Allure. Does anybody want to take a shot at what that means? Any ideas?
Appeal.
Appeal. Good. That's a good definition. You know, there's kind of a root in that word, the root word being lure. L-U-R-E. Kind of like a fishing lure. Right? What happens with a fishing lure is you cast it out there in the water and you drag it through the water and it spins and it looks appealing to the fish. But does it swim at them or away from them? I must have an audience of hunters, not fishers. Well, it swims away from them. Okay? And the fish want to chase it. It looks appealing to them. So that's why you don't hunt fish. They run away. You fish for fish. You make them want what it is that you have. Now, obviously, if you've got a good product, your prospect is going to end up a lot better shape than a fish would. But that same experience still has to be there. The lure is swimming away from them. It's kind of like what a fly fisherman does, too. cast that fly back and forth, and it sits down on the water, and the fish are down there looking up at it. And then it flies away, and it comes back, and it does that a certain amount of times to where it eventually drives the fish crazy. And this is why, if people are hanging up on you, not honoring their appointments with you, fighting with you about money and cost and time and all the classic objections, it typically means that there's not enough allure present. Because think about it, if that was really there, they wouldn't give you those things if you were really alluring. There's a difference between when your brother-in-law calls you with a new business idea and when Donald Trump calls you, right? You know, your brother could call you, hey, it's the newest, greatest thing. It's going to change your life. You think, yeah, you tell me that every 3 months. But if Donald Trump called you, it would be a different deal, wouldn't it? You would have the time. You would find the money. You would do all those things that we try to use as excuses when somebody is persuading us. You'd avoid them like crazy. That's what allure is. You're coming from a position of posture. Does anybody know what I mean by posture?
Place.
You're in, I guess, kind of a place of authority. And what it comes down to really is that you don't really need their business. If you don't really need their business, it makes them want to give you their business that much more. Okay? So there's a couple of different ways to present allure, and deadlines and limited space are certainly involved in that. But one thing is to tell your prospects up front. This is a technique that's taught by a few people. It's called an upfront contract. Works really well in phone and in personal sales. When you first meet a prospect, you say to them, okay, Bill, we're here to talk about a couple of things and what I can do to help your business. And before we get talking, there's something I need us to agree on. Okay, what's that? I need you to be willing to tell me no, Bill. My time's valuable. Your time's valuable. If what I'm telling you doesn't work for you or is not worth your time, just tell me no. And my feelings won't be hurt. We both save some time, and we can even stay friends that way. It won't hurt my feelings a bit. Is that something that you're willing to do at this point? So what you're doing there is you're getting them committed to tell you that instead of jerk you around and string you out for 2 weeks while you're chasing a sale that you never had in the first place. Okay? So what's happened then is because they've seen that, look, you know, I don't care if you do this or not. I got plenty of things going on. That's the message that's being sent. Now, you may not feel like that. You may be thinking, oh, no, if I don't make this sale, it's the end of the world, okay? You've got to do everything that you can to abandon that. And let me tell you something. If you're thinking that, if you're thinking, oh, no, if I don't make this sale, I'm not going to be able to make the mortgage, what that usually means is that you're not prospecting enough. You've got to find a way to get more leads, or you've got to hit the phone more, you've got to create more appointments. You got to do something, because when all your chips are on one prospect, you're usually going to lose. You got to spread those out a little bit. That's kind of a little side tangent, but yeah, when it's all based on, oh, this guy's got to close, you're not prospecting enough. You should be regularly talking to enough people to where if one guy drops off, that's no problem. You got plenty of other people to talk to. It's not a big deal. That's the upfront contract. Okay? Another way to do this is once a prospect starts to resist you a little bit, you pull back and then watch them chase. Well, I don't know. The thing is I'm not really sure we can afford it at this time. Well, yeah, if you're thinking that, that's probably the case. You know, it's typically for somebody that is in such and such a situation, and I don't want you to have any doubt. I think maybe we should talk another time, right? 9 times out of 10, they're going to come, whoa, hold on. I mean, let's talk here still. I haven't made any decisions yet. Well, are you sure? Are you sure you still want to talk? See, now what's funny is you've got your prospect begging to talk to you, which if this was a cold call, you started out with the begging, right? But you've got to eventually flip that on them so that they're the one that's begging you to have a discussion. Does that make sense? So you're getting a position of allure. Now, a lot of times, too, this may not apply to everybody here, and we'll take a couple of questions here in just a second, but if you have somebody that you work with or that's your assistant, what I would really have them do, let's say you've got a business partner, and both of you have appointments throughout the day. I would take 10 to 20 minutes at the beginning of each day for you to call each other's appointments for that day. So let's say I have a business partner named Bill, and he's got a 10:30 appointment with Anita on the phone today. I'd call and I'd say, "Hi, this is Steve. I work with Bill Johnson, and he had indicated to me that the two of you had set up an appointment today. Bill is quite busy today and asked me if I could give you a call to verify that you're still able to make it or what your status is." And they verify, ooh, you've got an assistant. You're verifying ahead of time that you can still make it. Must be busy, must be having some stuff going on. Because you've got to break out of this. We are just straight out abusive to salespeople. We don't respect their time. We lie to them. We cheat them, right? You can't be viewed as a salesperson. You've got to be viewed as that executive in the corner office that has very valuable time. And then people will start to treat you with a lot more respect and you'll get a lot more sales. Well, we are going to take a second then and answer anybody's questions or ideas or thoughts. Does anybody have anything they want to bounce off of myself or the group? Fair enough. And you can certainly write those down. If you're too shy to ask them, feel free to bounce them off of us next week. We're happy to handle them. And we'll be on same time, same channel. We did get this recorded. So those of you that don't have the recordings, just email in, and we'll be happy to provide a copy of this recording to you so you can go back and review it. And with that, we are going to go ahead and wrap things up for the day, okay? Everybody have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.